You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by Harrison Fagan. That streak that he had going, just like the Houston Rockets' win streak, is now over, though his did not last 14 games. His lasted two whole shows. He went two shows in a row, making it before he had to get back to the day spa. I am joined instead by his younger son, Grant Goldberg, of the Locked On Seahawks podcast. If you guys are NFL fans, you guys should go check that out. He does a great job with Spike Friedman. And he also is the social media manager for Forum Blue and Gold and Lakers Outsiders. Grant, how much better than Harrison are you doing right now?
Well, I think he'll probably be more refreshed given all the time he spends at the day spa.
Yeah,
so I can be more relaxed. I think that he's more mellowed out sometimes. But I'm doing well. I think in contrast to Harrison, I'm doing pretty well.
I'm doing pretty freaking well because the Lakers had arguably one of their best wins, probably their best win of the year. And honestly, at the end of the season, we'll probably look back on this as one of their best wins, period. But they go into Houston. Houston hadn't lost with Chris Paul in the lineup. Yes, they did not have Clint Capella, and he is pretty important to everything that they do, but really he's Clint Capella, and if he didn't have James Harden and Chris Paul on his team, I don't think people would know who Clint Capella is. But they didn't. They go in and they beat the Houston Rockets in Houston, and they end their 14 game-winning streak. So what Grant and I are going to do, we're going to talk about the game. We are going to talk about the Lakers young core compared to others out there. And then we are going to, because we have to, we'd be remiss if we didn't, we are going to finish the show by talking about this whole Julius Randle playing 8 minutes situation and the way Luke Walton is handling that. We have Luke said after the game basically that it had a lot to do with the way guys are playing. I kind of think there's an issue with process there that I'm starting to recognize. So we're going to finish the show in the C block on that. As always, make sure you guys are following the show on audio. Man, it's been a long time. There goes that streak too. Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Let's go ahead and get to this. Grant, we have to start with Kyle Kuzma. The dude drops 38 points on 17 total field goal attempts. 7 of 10 from three-point range, 7 of 10 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds, 4 assists, a block, no turnovers. He is the first Laker, I believe, to accomplish that stat line, first Laker rookie to accomplish that stat line since Magic Johnson. Every time I think to myself, wow, I don't think Kyle Kuzma can get any higher or let alone, when is this guy going to fall back down to earth and regress to something closer to a mean? He goes and drops this kind of game. He was unreal tonight.
Yeah, you touched on it earlier. If a guy is going 7 to 10 from free throw range, you might want him to shoot better. But he shot 7 to 10 from three-point range as well. That's just ridiculous. he was incredible. He was the go-to guy for the Lakers offense tonight. And it was just a spark throughout the whole game to go tit for tat with James Harden, you know, as a rookie, that's unheard of. And you know, I think it's pretty funny that going into the season, you were comparing one rookie to Magic Johnson, but now you got this Kyle Kuzma guy just completely flipping the NBA on its head. You know, he's the 27th pick and he comes in and he lights it up. Fantastic. And really all facets tonight.
The thing that keeps on standing out to me, the thing that So, like, Brandon Ingram tonight didn't play necessarily as well. He had 13 points on 4 of 15 shooting, 1 of 3 from 3, 4 of 6 from the line, which is good for him. But all game, he kind of felt like he was getting bullied, especially when P.J. Tucker was out there molesting him on the wing. But when you watch Kyle Kuzma, he has this way of rolling off of contact, rolling with contact. His footwork is insane. Yes, there are things that he could do on the defensive end and maybe be a more impactful player beyond his shooting stats and his offensive production. But at the end of the day, you're talking about a rookie shooting or scoring at rates and levels of efficiency that only a handful of guys have reached. I mean, you're talking about Karl-Anthony Towns, LeBron James, like the cream of the crop rookie seasons. Kyle Kuzma's keeping up with that offensively. It's getting to a point, right? It's getting to a point where we kind of have to say, like, is this for real? Like, is he just exceeding expectations and riding the hottest streak of all time? Or is this, like, we're more than a quarter of the season way through and he's still doing this kind of thing?
Yeah, if this is not enough, if this sample size is too small, maybe you wait till the All-Star break. But he's just been in lights out whenever we think maybe he's having a little bit of a shooting slump or he's not making as much of an impact scoring the ball as we'd like him to. You know, he comes back and has a game like this. I think teams are starting to run out of answers. He's so polished on the block, and he can obviously shoot the three ball. And it's just been such a pleasant surprise. I know the Lakers have been so good at drafting late in the first round as of the recent years, but you know, this is by far their best selection there at this point to me.
Yeah, no, he's in terms of value at a pick, he is the pick of the draft.
And that's saying that with Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz, who I'd take Kyle Kuzma over Donovan Mitchell, and I'd probably think about it a little bit, but very close to not thinking about it twice.
Yeah, he has to start from now on, right? We're gonna talk a little bit more about what went on in this game, but to wrap up this A block, there is no reason moving forward that Larry Nance Jr. should start over him at any point for the rest of the season, right?
Yeah, the fact that we've already had to have this conversation when he's been removed is, you know, bad enough, but if we have to have it again, there's serious issues with the coaching staff.
We'll talk about the coaching staff, like I said, at the end of it. I wanted to make sure, because, again, this is the best Lakers win of this season so far, and in quite some time. Like, we have to go back to that random blowout that the Lakers had of the Warriors. I think it was last year, whenever it was. So this was a really fun one. We're going to keep talking about it here in a second. Hang on to your butts. All right, so Kyle Kuzma, we've already talked about. I wanted to touch on the fact that the Lakers sustain. Like, James Harden scores 51 points on 27 shots, 4 of 6 and 3-pointer. He gets to the free throw line 21 times, 9 assists. Like, this dude accounted for at least, and I'm not, I if we just, if all of the assists that he had turn into 2-point shots, you're talking about a guy being good for 69 of his team's 116 points. Nice. But they took that type of effort from James Harden, arguably this season's MVP thus far, and just kept on going with it. They said, all right, James, you're going to do your thing. Kuzma going off for the 38 that he had certainly helps. But it says something that the Lakers built that 22-point lead, had basically lost the vast majority of it. At one point, they trailed in the game, took that punch, and were able to rebound and still beat arguably the best team in the NBA so far this season. This is the kind of win, given their schedule moving forward, this is the kind of win that they can gain some momentum off of, right?
Yeah, it gives them confidence, and they came into this game actually playing good basketball. They took the Warriors to overtime, would have beat them if not for that terrible free throw shooting, and they lost to the Cavaliers by single digits. So they're coming off their toughest stretch, and they're playing arguably their best basketball. They come in and beat the hottest team in the NBA with, you know, their undefeated combo of James Harden and Chris Paul, like, this is a win that gives them confidence. And, you know, they can go out there and they can beat teams on any given night. And especially when a superstar like James Harden goes off like he did and gets those calls to send to the line. We saw this, the same Lakers team lose to the 76ers and Joel Embiid when he just, you know, went absolutely bananas. We saw this team today weather that storm and, like you said, take that punch and be able to punch back and ultimately win this game.
On the road. Against the better Houston team. Yeah, it's a super impressive win. And look, you mentioned Philadelphia, and this has been kind of a pet peeve this season, and it's a drum that I've been beating all year, is that I don't necessarily understand why it's this non-discussion that Philadelphia is so far ahead of the Lakers in terms of basketball talent. When the Lakers have beaten them once, and the other game, they were right there with them despite Joel Embiid putting together one of the better games. I mean, one of the better stat lines, really, ever, period.
Yeah.
But they took that, and they still contended with that team to the very end of that one. And then they also, like I said, beat them. They have a win like tonight. They've taken the Warriors to overtime twice. If let's just put it this way. If the 76ers had put together a resume like the one I just talked about, we would be hearing nothing but why wouldn't LeBron choose Philadelphia? They have the cap room. They have these guys on cheap contracts for the next few years, so he can be able to team up with another superstar as on top of playing with these guys. Blah 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 blah. And yet, after a win like tonight, I'm looking at NBA Twitter, and it's a whole bunch of whatever.
It's a ghost town.
Yeah,
you see tumbleweeds blowing around.
Yeah, it looks like the inside of my brain, frankly.
But like the thing that's apparent to me, and you know, this team is just making so many strides from last year. I think that obviously the roster makeup is different, but you see this team probably earlier in the point last year. They built these leads that the Lakers had like tonight, but they would lose these leads and they'd have to scrap and fight in the fourth quarter and ultimately lose. We saw the team get up big tonight, lose that lead, and then recover and be able to, you know, stretch the lead out to the point where it was a minute left and they were up by 11. And so, like, this team, it's, I wouldn't say battle-tested because they haven't been to the playoffs. They, you know, obviously don't have these kind of veterans, but they know what it takes to close out these games. And that's really impressive to me. And another thing that I wanted to note really quick is that this team is already, they already know how to get to the line, but once they start making their free throws, they're going to be in a lot more of these kind of games where they get up big and hopefully they can hang on to them. I mean, they had more free throw attempts than the Rockets did, and the Rockets have James Harden.
And not only if they start getting to the free throw line because they've already shown a proclivity to be able to do so, but they're doing that as a young team. Like, you have referees that aren't necessarily giving them superstar calls. If anything, the superstar calls are going the other way, right? Where James Harden blinks and all of a sudden it's two free throws or three free throws or an and one or whatever.
Yeah, the we Lakers saw Corey Brewer miss on a foul attempt and he still got the call.
And so like I'm, you know, you like you're saying, not only if they start making their free throws, but if they start getting non-rookie treatment, you're talking about another level of efficiency that this team can hit. And it kind of gets back to, I'm going to criticize Luke Walton in the next segment. I'm warning everybody ahead of time. But I think Luke Walton deserves a ton of praise for getting this team to be able to buy in defensively and let that be the foundation from which they start building upward. And as the offense comes, they will become that much better of a team. Not just this year, because this year it's really going to be, all right, let's see what development they have. Let's see how long they remain in the playoff picture. And they could realistically jump back into the playoff picture if you look at their next 10 games or so. But if that, the actual win total doesn't matter. But if they develop properly and they build off of what they've built so far defensively and become more efficient as the year goes along because of free throw shooting, because they can put in second level sets and all of that good stuff, Well, then now you're talking about something that they are definitely building towards, right? And yeah. and really, that's what anybody who had realistic expectations for this team, that's where this season's that's the top priority here, was that they were going to finish the season building towards something, and this is the kind of win that they can build off of.
Yeah, I agree. And I mentioned earlier they've obviously made strides from last year, but you look at the on-court product rather than the win total, and you know, you're seeing them being able to play defense. Everybody's buying in, especially on all these one-year deals. And it's something that you look at and you're like, all right, well, they can take another step next year. And especially when you have guys like Josh Hart coming into their own and playing stellar defense tonight and doing really everything you can ask a rookie to do. And you think, well, you look top to bottom from the roster and you think they can only get better. We see them make strides from last year, and you expect them to get better as the season progresses and going into next year.
Yep, 100%. I want to really quickly wrap up by talking about other guys on the Lakers. We already talked about Ingram. I thought it said something about where he is currently in his career and the impact that he could have moving forward, that despite having that kind of poor shooting night that he did, he still racked up 6 rebounds, still racked up 6 assists, the 2 steals, and despite shooting as poorly as he did, he was only a -5, which is kind of crazy considering that he had a lot of moments tonight. Yeah. He didn't really look all that great. But Lonzo Ball with 16 rebounds, 16 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, and 2 blocks. He winds up being a +6. Josh Hart is where just raw plus minus, it becomes, you know, tells a poor story. But he was a -24. I thought he hit 3 shots tonight, and all 3 of them were just monstrous shots. Like, they all came in big moments, and minus the one that he hit to start the game. But he continues to show stuff. Just overall, you're looking at a team-wide effort, and I would get yelled at, I would get added, I'd get emails, I would get all kinds of nasty stuff if I didn't mention Corey Brewer. Honestly, yeah. that's why Harrison isn't on tonight's show. Corey Brewer's play tonight actually made his brain explode. He is no longer with us, so rest in peace, Harrison. But Corey Brewer tonight drops 21 points on 9 shots.
it's hilarious because, one, the day spa that we sent Harrison to also has a hospital next door to it. So it was kind of like a 2 birds, 1 stone kind of situation.
Yeah.
But Corey Brewer was effing awesome tonight. Yeah. Which is so weird to say, and I promise you, you're not listening to an episode of The Twilight Zone on tape. Like, you've got, like, a Corey Brewer revenge game? Like, can we call it that?
Yeah. I mean, at one point tonight, I tweeted out Corey Brewer revenge game and replaced all of the E's with 3's because it felt like he was hitting 3-pointer after 3-pointer. He was great, and not just offensively. I thought there were moments tonight where... And this is James Harden that we're talking about, so the bar is set relatively low. But I thought Corey Brewer was giving Harden some stuff to think about. And when you consider what he did to Devin Booker earlier in the year and the fact that he gets to play on infinite turbo button, like, it's just kind of fun to watch him when Corey Brewer is going out there and playing the way he does. So that was good to watch. Shouts to Corey Brewer. Andrew Bogut was a net nothing. Like, he was not positive nor negative. That's about as good as we could have hoped for from Bogut. 17 minutes is kind of high. And on that note, we are going to talk about the rotations and the way Luke coached this game. We're going to get to that here in a second. All right. So we ranted and raved about how great the Lakers game was, and it was great. It was almost undeniably great. But there's a bit of an asterisk to that greatness, and it comes in the form of Julius Randle playing only 8 minutes. He didn't get into the game until there was about 8 minutes and 30 seconds left in the second quarter. That is not great process. And like I said to start the show, Luke Walton was asked about it. He said that it had a lot to do with the fact that the Lakers starting unit looked a lot better than he maybe thought they were going to with Andrew Bogut out there. And then Larry Nance Jr. was the first guy to come off of the bench, and he was doing typical Larry Nance Jr. stuff that you would expect an energy guy off of the bench to do. And that kind of left Julius Randle out in the cold in terms of rotation. And that kind of, I'll make the point, Grant, and I'll let you run with it as you will. It seems to me that Julius Randle has a lot more that he has to do to impress Luke Walton and the coaching staff than other guys in the rotation have to. So basically, so long as Andrew Bogut isn't out there throwing pickaxes at his fellow teammates on the court, he is doing great, right? So long as Larry Nance Jr. goes onto the court, walks onto the court with both shoes tied and dives every so often, then he's checking boxes in Luke Walton's note sheet that keeps him out there on the court. Whereas like Julius Randle has to at all times be the Lakers' best defensive player all around. He has to make great decisions. He has to be active on the boards on both sides. He has to do all kinds of things to get Luke Walton to notice how well he's playing. Would you say that that's a fair assessment, or would you say that that's kind of extreme? It's obviously extreme because I'm exaggerating, but would you say that the basis of that argument is something that we could roll with?
Yeah, you're definitely right there. I think that, you know, the box score tells you all you need to know about Luke's relationship with Bogut and Nance. I think that obviously Bogut's play helped him a lot, and that took a lot of Randle's minutes, and obviously that wasn't the plan going forward into this game. But, you know, Larry Nance got 22 minutes with Andrew Bogut getting 17. So, you know, that already tells you all you need to know about what Julius Randle needs to do. He has to jump through hoops to get on the floor. And, you know, even when he does get playing time, he should be hovering around 30, 35 minutes, and he's, you know, often at 21 minutes and 22. And he's a guy that, you know, I think at the time we thought we were putting a lot of stock into his off-season workout and getting his body in shape. But, man, that's helped him so much. And we've seen it on the floor. We've seen him be more agile, and that's helped him defensively on the perimeter, inside. And he's running up and down the floor, and he's really what the bench unit needs, but we're not seeing him get any time. I think that even today we thought there was a possibility that Thomas Bryant was going to get some significant play, but he didn't even touch the floor. But I think that Julius Randle should have had way more than 8 minutes, obviously. When you look down the box score, in that 8 minutes he was 2 for 3, had a rebound and an assist, also a turnover. I think that, like you said, Julius Randle has to do so much, but he has such a short leash, so he has that turnover, he has two personal fouls, and then he gets yanked.
Yeah, I kind of look at it this way, because the narrative that's going to come from this one, especially from the Lakers beat, who just will do everything that they possibly can to not criticize Luke Walton, the narrative that's going to come out from this is going to be, well, the Lakers did look good, and they were up by 22, and then Randle came in, and he kind of sulked, and then there went the lead, right? And you're ignoring the human element of this thing. Like, yes, this was not good, one of Randle's even decent games. He looked actively bad out there. He didn't have the same spark. He didn't have the same bounce in his step. There was a play tonight that sticks out to me. I think it was either Ingram or Clarkson passed the ball off to Randle, and he had a dunk. And usually he pretty thunderously hammers it home, does that thing that bigs do where they dunk it and they pick up their knees so it looks like they're even higher up on the rim. And he kind of shakes the backboard. But tonight, because it looked to me like he was pretty frustrated, openly frustrated, he just kind of dropped the ball into the rim and ran back down on defense. And look, this is where there's this culture clash between old school and new school. And the old school people will say, well, it doesn't matter what the situation is. You get into the game, you bust your ass, you play 150% and blah, 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 and rah, rah, rah. And the new school kind of thought is, well, wait, let's kind of try to figure out what went into Randle not playing the way he normally does. And there was no reason. Like, it'd be, it, I'm, I was hoping to hear after the game that maybe Randle was late. I was hoping to hear that maybe he didn't look good in pregame warmups, that he was nursing something or whatever, but we didn't hear anything like that. All we saw was Walton stick with Andrew Bogut, who has no future on this team. The first sub off of the bench was Larry Nance Jr., which usually the first big off of the bench is Julius Randle. So I'm sure he's saying, oh, cool, so my spot in the rotation is still the same even with Brook Lopez not playing. I'm still not going to get as many minutes. And it led to what I thought, yes, Randle sulked, but that I think is telling only half of the story. And it's reached a point. I'm going to run another idea by you. And I get to do this because Harrison usually shoots down all my ideas. But
I'm going to let you shoot.
Yeah, so it's reached a point where, how do I want to put this delicately so that the Lakers don't get mad? But it's become so inexplicable that Randle's minutes go up and down the way they do that it's hard for me to act as if something else might not be at work here. Basically, like, it's a math issue in the cap situation that the Lakers are operating under, that maybe they don't want to pay Julius Randle beyond this upcoming season because they're going to be looking to pay Paul George, or they're going to be looking to pay LeBron James, or whichever superstars that they wind up with moving forward beyond this upcoming season.
So you're saying there's something outside of the on-court product that's making the Lakers think, well, maybe we shouldn't play this guy.
I don't know if it's necessarily maybe we shouldn't play this guy so much as it's much. Like, yeah, as much. It's like, I think they look at Nance and they say, this guy might be easier to fit into our future plans with Paul George coming, whether it's cap-wise or playing style-wise, whether it's state of mind, mentality, what have you. It feels to me like we're reaching that point where it's too obvious a contradiction of realities that the Lakers are just like, they're watching Julius Randle and they're watching the statistical output, not just himself personally, but the way that the team looks statistically and in terms of the eye test, that they're looking at that and they're saying, nah, you know what, we got to keep on seeing what we have in Larry Nance Jr. Like, it's getting weird. And it feels like it came all to a head tonight where Julius Randle only plays 8 minutes in arguably the best Lakers win that they've had in quite some time. Both these things can be true, but it feels, I was DMing with somebody, and I'm not going to drop a name or anything like that, but it feels like a move with Julius Randle is coming and the Lakers are preparing themselves for life after Randle.
Well, I think that there's reason for you to obviously think these things and to think that maybe there's something in order for a Randle move. But also, you know, I think maybe it's a product of how well they played with their starters tonight and how well they, like, seamlessly the transition from Bogut to Nance was, or however it may be. I think that tonight maybe it was just Julius Randle was a victim of circumstance. Mm-hmm. But there's definitely a case to make for Julius Randle maybe being on the move and the Lakers kind of making that decision on Randle a little bit early.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think, yes, he was a victim of circumstance because nobody could have possibly seen this performance coming from the Lakers. Not a single soul. Nobody would have predicted, and I believe the line heading into tonight's game had the Houston Rockets minus 15. Right, so that's a huge deficit that and people were betting on the Rockets to beat the Lakers by at least 16 points tonight, right? So obviously this was pretty unmitigating circumstances or pretty unique circumstances. All that said,
Darius from Forum Blue and Gold. I mean, going into the game, his preview was just 600 words on how the Lakers were going to lose tonight.
I mean, that's basically where my head was at. I think Domin tweeted out like, "Just please don't lose by 50," right? And that's kind of where I was at. I was just kind of getting myself ready. Maybe the Lakers would make a couple runs. They've played hard all year, so maybe they would keep it close through the third quarter or so, and Houston would pull away at the end of the fourth. But that didn't happen. The Lakers wound up winning, obviously, and that is the. It's probably a tie for me, really, in terms of stories to come out from this. But it's reaching that point, though, with Randle that, look, you combine the fact that it's a math issue cap-wise, you combine the fact that they have somebody in Larry Nance Jr. that at every possible turn, Luke Walton goes out of his way to praise, whereas given what Randle has done for the Lakers this season, I don't think the praise has necessarily matched that production. And given the fact that Randle isn't their guy, like Randle isn't Magic Johnson's guy, he isn't Rob Pelinka's guy, he isn't even Luke Walton's guy. Like if D'Angelo Russell wasn't any of those guys' guy, then Julius Randle was taken before him, and there is no real connection there. And look, maybe they're looking at it as, can Larry Nance Jr. become what Julius Randle is currently? If they do land LeBron, can he play the four better than Julius Randle has, enabling them to sign a more traditional five? Who knows? But it's getting to that point where it's almost intellectually dishonest to not think of it from a standpoint of, well, what else might be going on here? And it's hard for me to move past it.
Yeah, it's a combination of all those things, really. And plus, I think you're kind of itching to put your tinfoil cap on. I know that you like to get a little creative with all this stuff. And so, maybe, you put it on and you start to think a little bit outside the box. But, it's not without a warrant. I think that, there's a lot of good points that you brought up. And I wanted to talk about Nance for a little bit because, Nance, in contrast to Randle, he just kind of hovers around his floor. Like, he has a pretty just average floor. Not too high of highs, not too high of lows. With Randle, you get those, you get those big highs and you get those low lows. And you saw a lower low tonight. He was kind of lethargic out there. But, that's a guy that usually is his first sub off the bench, like we were saying. And, he brings that energy from the first quarter on. And to sit out for the whole first quarter, that's a body blow to him mentally. And so you get that low to low. But, when you're with a guy like LeBron James, say they sign him, you have him running down the floor with LeBron, and you have that versatility on defense to switch on whoever. I think that, by far he's a better fit than Nance. And I think it'd be kind of buggy of the Lakers to think that Nance would be, a better fit with LeBron or Paul George.
Yeah, I think it comes down to a variety of things. And like Harrison has said on this very show a few times, like it's just a math issue. Maybe the Lakers think that they can get more for Randle in return than they can get for Clarkson if they just try to shed Clarkson's salary. Maybe they think that they can combine Randle with Lou Alding to get rid of both of those, either both of Randle's potential deal and Lou Alding's current and actual deal. Maybe that's what they're thinking. But given everything that's going on, both in the front office and on the court, you just have to take all of this into account, and it's going to be something to watch as the season goes along. And these next 3 weeks are going to be hugely interesting because you have Ivica Zubac, who probably needs minutes at some point if the Lakers are hoping to see what they have before they make a decision on his team option this year. They have Andrew Bogut, who is going to be auditioning for playoff teams and title contending teams as this season goes along and as they get into buyout season. They have Thomas Bryant, who hasn't even played yet and is lighting up the G League. And then, by the way, they have Julius Randle and Larry Nance Jr., who are two opposite ends of the spectrum, as we've talked about. And you have a coach in Luke Walton who is still trying to figure out his own thing in only his second full year as a head coach. So it's going to be fun to watch. Tonight's game was a lot of fun to watch. The Lakers wind up beating the Houston Rockets 122-116 behind Kyle Kuzma's 38 points on 17 field goals. Unbelievable. This kid's for real. Kobe already quote tweeted Mike Trudell with a muscle raised. How good do you think Kuzma would have to get before Kobe comes back and is just like, all right, I got to take a few shots here just to make sure that people don't forget about me?
Yeah, I think that he's going to have to drop at least 40 and do it a couple times.
What's going to be great is if, let's just say, hypothetically, Kyle Kuzma drops 40 one game and then he drops 41 the next game and Kobe tweets out, well, I did 81 in one game by myself, so I don't know what you guys are all excited about.
It's like, don't y'all forget about me. I'm Kobe. Like, our name starts with the same letter. That's about it with the comparisons.
Amazing. We gotta call him like the Kuz Mamba or something.
Oh my! I think you stumbled onto something right there. I've been making so many shirts for Forum Blue and Gold, and you can buy them on tpublic.com/forumbluegold. But I think that would be a money sale. I've been looking for Kobe shirts to make. So Anthony, if you don't mind, if I piggyback off your pun game, that'd be great.
I only take 80% royalties, so don't worry.
You can 81%.
Exactly, 81% royalties. All right, so that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Thank you very much to Grant for tuning in. Those of you who are if you're a Rams fan and you are looking for something to listen to, especially there's some. I don't even know how to. Is it Schadenfreude? I believe it's Schadenfreude. That after the Rams beat the Seattle Seahawks, what I used to do all the time is when the Lakers would beat the Boston Celtics, I would read Boston Celtics stuff just to laugh at all those sad people out there on the wrong coast. So if you're a Rams fan and you wanna listen to a Seahawks podcast talk about football in a really intelligent way, check out my friends over there. This is Grant. You listen to him talk about the Lakers. Listen to him and Spike Friedman over there on Locked On Seahawks. It's a great show. Two great guys. Thanks, Grant, for hopping on with us. Make sure you guys are following the show on Megaphone/Panoply, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Today's Fast Break, Spotify, Alexa, Lakers Nation, and Lakers Outsiders. Y'all have a good one. We'll be back at it. Harrison will get another streak of two shows in a row going tomorrow.